The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
All right, we're going to jump in here during our happy hour brought to you by the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, where we'll be live for our Halloween extravaganza show on October 31st. Make your plans. October is a great time to be in Cape May, and the Grand Hotel has some really amazing specials going on right now. So go to GrandHotelCapeMay.com. I'm going to jump in here. The president speaking with Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as they announced the results of their investigation into the links between autism and what we'll find out. Let's take a listen.
Live coverage here on C-SPAN.
This meeting for 20 years, actually. And it's not that everything's 100% understood or known, but I think we've made a lot of strides. Wish it was done a long time ago. Today, we're delighted to be joined by America's top medical and public health professionals as we announce historic steps to confront the crisis of autism. Horrible, horrible crisis. I want to thank the man who brought this issue to the forefront of American politics along with me. And we actually met in my office. Is it like 20 years ago, Bobby? It's probably 20 years ago in New York. I was a developer, as you probably heard, and I always had very strong feelings about autism and how it happened and where it came from. And he and I don't know, the word got out, and I wouldn't say that people were very understanding of where we were, but it's turning out that we understood a lot more than a lot of people who studied it, we think. And I say we think because I don't think they were really letting the public know what they knew. Thanks as well to the director of the National Institute of Health, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, FDA Commissioner, Dr. Marty McCarry. These are great people. Administrator of the Centers for Medicine and Medicaid Services, Dr. Mehmet Oz, and Acting Assistant Secretary of HHS, Dr. Dorothy Fink. So thank you all. Thank you, Dorothy, very much. The meteoric rise in autism is among the most alarming public health developments in history. There's never been anything like this. Just a few decades ago, 1 in 10,000 children had autism. So that's not a long time. And I've always heard, you know, they say a few, but I think it's a lot less time than that. It used to be 1 in 20,000, then 1 in 10,000. And I would say that's probably 18 years ago. And now it's 1 in 31, but in some areas it's much worse than that, if you can believe it. 1 in 31. And I gave numbers yesterday. For boys, it's 1 in 12. I was told that's in California where they have, for some reason, a more severe problem. But whether it's 1 in 12 or 1 in 31, can you imagine? That's down from 1 in 20,000 and 1 in 10,000. And now we're at the level of 1 in 12 in some cases for boys. 1 in 31 overall. So since 2000, autism rates have surged by much more than 400%. Instead of attacking those who ask questions, everyone should be grateful for those who are trying to get the answers to this complex situation. And the first day, all of these great doctors behind me were there. I told them, this is what we got. We have to find out. Because when you go from 20,000 to 10,000, and then you go to 12, you know there's something artificial. They're taking something. And by the way, I think I can say that there are certain groups of people that don't take vaccines and don't take any pills that have no autism. That have no autism. Does that tell you something? That's currently. Is that a correct statement, by the way?
There are some studies that suggest that, yeah, with the Amish, for example.
The Amish, yeah, virtually. I heard none. See, Bobby wants to be very careful with what he says, and he should, but I'm not so careful with what I say. But you have certain groups. The Amish, as an example, they have essentially no autism. First, effective immediately, the FDA will be notifying physicians that the use of said, let's see how we say that. Acetaminophen. Is that okay?
Yes.
Which is basically commonly known as Tylenol during pregnancy, can be associated with a very increased risk of autism. So taking Tylenol is not good. All right, I'll say it. It's not good. For this reason, they are strongly recommending that women limit Tylenol use during pregnancy unless medically necessary. That's, for instance, in cases of extremely high fever that you feel you can't tough it out, you can't do it. I guess there's that. It's a small number of cases, I think. But if you can't tough it out, if you can't do it, that's what you're going to have to do. You'll take a Tylenol, but it'll be very sparingly. It can be something that's very dangerous to the woman's health. In other words, a fever that's very, very dangerous, and ideally a doctor's decision, because I think you shouldn't take it, and you shouldn't take it during the entire pregnancy. They may tell you that toward the end of the pregnancy you shouldn't take it during the entire, and you shouldn't give the child the Tylenol every time he goes, he's born, and he goes and has a shot. You shouldn't give a Tylenol to that child. All pregnant women should talk to their doctors for more information about limiting the use of this medication while pregnant. So ideally you don't take it at all, but if you have to, if you can't tough it out, or if there's a problem, you're going to end up doing it. The other thing that I can tell you that I'll say that they will maybe say at a little bit later date, but I think when you go for the shot, you do it over a five-time period. Take it over five times or four times, but you take it in smaller doses, and you spread it out over a period of years. And they pump so much stuff into those beautiful little babies, it's a disgrace. I don't see it. I think it's very bad. They're pumping, it looks like they're pumping into a horse. You have a little child, a little fragile child, and you get a vat of 80 different vaccines, I guess, 80 different blends, and they pump it in. So ideally, a woman won't take Tylenol. And on the vaccines, it would be good, instead of one visit where they pump the baby loaded up with stuff, you'll do it over a period of four times or five times. I've been so into this issue for so many years just because I couldn't understand how a thing like this could happen. And you know it's artificially induced. It's not like something that when you go from all of those, you know, healthy babies to a point where I don't even know structurally if a country can afford it. And that's the least of the problems. To have families destroyed over this is just so, so terrible. I also, and we've already done this, we want no mercury in the vaccine. We want no aluminum in the vaccine. The MMR, I think, should be taken separately. This is based on what I feel, the mumps, measles, all the three should be taken separately. And it seems to be that when you mix them, there could be a problem. So there's no downside in taking them separately. In fact, they think it's better. So let it be separate. The chickenpox is already separate, because when that got mixed in, I guess they made it four for a while, it really was bad. So they make chickenpox individually there. Okay, when you mix them, something maybe happens. So there's no downside in doing it. It's not like, oh, if you do it, bad things. No, it's only good side. And it may not have that much of an impact, but it may have a big impact. So let those be taken separately. And then hepatitis B is sexually transmitted. There's no reason to give a baby that's almost just born hepatitis B. So I would say wait till the baby is 12 years old and formed and take hepatitis B. And I think if you do those things, it's going to be a whole different, it's going to be a revolution in a positive sense in the country. The FDA will be updating the label of an existing drug to reflect potential benefits in reducing some autism symptoms. This gives hope to the many parents with autistic children that it may be possible to improve their lives. That's one of the things that I'm very, very happy about. I mean, this was mostly going to be on how not to have the child affected, but we've learned some pretty good things about certain elements of genius that can be given to a baby, and the baby can get better, and in some cases maybe substantially better. Not going to be easy, but be a lot easier if it didn't happen in the first place, as these great parents fully understand, right? They fully understand. I feel so terribly for... I have so many friends with autistic children. It's a tough situation. Finally, to help reach the ultimate goal of ending the autism fever, the NIH will be announcing 13 major grant awards from the Autism Data Science Initiatives. And to be honest with you, to me, that's the least important. It's not even a money thing at this point. There's so much money, but they have to do, and they have to move quickly. When the alternative is that nothing bad can happen, let's do it now. I was just saying to Bobby and the group, let's do it now. Nothing bad can happen. It can only good happen. But with Tylenol, don't take it. Don't take it. And if you can't live, if your fever is so bad, you have to take one, because there's no alternative to that. Sadly, first question, what can you take instead? It's actually, there's not an alternative to that. And as you know, other of the medicines are absolutely proven bad. I mean, they've been proven bad with the aspirins and the Advils and others, right? And they've been proven bad. So I'd like to ask Bobby to get up to the podium and say a few words, and then Dr. Bhattacharya and Dr. McCary, Dr. Oz, Dr. Fink, followed by two incredible mothers that have experienced firsthand what this country is going through, what parts of the world are going through. And I will say there are parts of the world that don't take Tylenol. I mean, there's a rumor, and I don't know if it's so or not, that Cuba, they don't have Tylenol because they don't have the money for Tylenol, and they have virtually no autism, okay? Tell me about that one. And there are other parts of the world where they don't have Tylenol, where they don't have autism. That tells you a lot, and I want to say it right now. And, you know, the way I look at it, don't take it. Don't take it. There's no downside in not taking it. So I'd like to ask Bobby to come up and say a few words. I hope I didn't ruin his day, but that's the way I feel. I've been very strong on the subject for a long time. You know, life is common sense, too. And there's a lot of common sense in this. And I wish things like this were brought up. And this group has worked so hard on it. But I'd like to be a little bit more, a little speedier in the process of a recommendation, because there's no harm in going quicker. There's absolutely no harm. At worst, there's no harm. Thank you very much. Bobby, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To meet the president's challenge, I ordered HHS to launch an unprecedented all-agency effort to identify all causes of autism, including toxic and pharmaceutical exposures. At President Trump's urging, NIH, FDA, CDC, and CMS are turning over every stone to identify the etiology of the autism epidemic and how patients and parents can prevent and reverse this alarming trend. We have broken down the traditional silos that have long separated these agencies, and we have fast-tracked research and guidance. Historically, NIH has focused almost solely on politically safe and entirely fruitless research about the genetic drivers of autism. And that would be like studying the genetic drivers of lung cancer without looking at cigarettes. And that's what NIH has been doing for 20 years. As a result, we don't have an answer to this critical question, despite the cataclysmic impact of the epidemic on our nation's children. We are now replacing the institutional culture of politicized science and corruption with evidence-based medicine. NIH research teams are currently testing multiple hypotheses with no area off limits. We promise transparency as we uncover the potential causes and treatments, and we will notify the public regularly of our progress. Today, we are announcing two important findings from our autism work that are vital for parents to know as they make these decisions. First, HHS will act on acetaminophen. The FDA is responding to clinical and laboratory studies that suggest a potential association between acetaminophen use during pregnancy and adverse neurodevelopmental outcomes, including later diagnosis for ADHD and autism. Scientists have proposed biological mechanisms linking prenatal acetaminophen exposure to altered brain development. We have also evaluated the contrary studies that show no association. Today, the FDA will issue a physician's notice about the risk of acetaminophen during pregnancy and begin the process to initiate a safety label change. HHS will launch a nationwide public service campaign to inform families and protect public health. FDA also recognized that acetaminophen is often the only tool for fevers and pain in pregnancy, as other alternatives have well-documented adverse effects. HHS wants, therefore, to encourage clinicians to exercise their best judgment and the use of acetaminophen for fevers and pain in pregnancy by prescribing the lowest effective dose for the shortest necessary duration and only when treatment is required. Furthermore, thanks to also to the politicization of science, the safety of acetaminophen against the risk of neurodevelopmental disorders in young children has never been validated. Prudent medicine, therefore, suggests caution in acetaminophen use by young children, especially since strong evidence also has associated it with liver toxicity. Some studies have also found the use of acetaminophen in children can potentially prolong viral illnesses. FDA will drive new research to safeguard mothers, children, and families. In addition to a possible acetaminophen connection to autism for pregnant women, infants, and toddlers, our research has revealed that folate deficiency in a child's brain can lead to autism. We have also identified an exciting therapy that may benefit large numbers of children who suffer from autism. Peer-reviewed literature has documented that up to 60% of folate-deficient children with ASD can have improved verbal communications if given leucovorin. I have instructed NIH, FDA, and CMS to help doctors treat children appropriately. Jay will help tell that story, which started with sound science, the kind that restores faith in government. This announcement also represents a historic collaboration between NIH, FDA, CDC, and CMS. We expect this to be the first of many announcements over the coming years that deliver actionable information to parents on underlying cause of autism and the potential paths for prevention and reversal. Finally, autism is a complex disorder with multifactorial etiology. We are continuing to investigate a multiplicity of potential causes with no areas of taboo. One area that we are closely examining, as the president mentioned, is vaccines. Some 40 to 70% of mothers who have children with autism believe that their child was injured by a vaccine. President Trump believes that we should be listening to these mothers instead of gaslighting and marginalizing them like prior administrations. Some of our friends like to say that we should believe all women. But some of these same people have been silencing and demonizing these mothers for three decades. Because research on the potential link between autism and vaccines has been actively suppressed in the past, it will take time for an honest look at this topic by scientists. And I want to reassure the people in the autism community that we will be uncompromising and relentless in our search for answers. We will perform the studies that should have been performed 25 years ago. Whatever the answer is, we will tell you what we find. We are researching this issue to all three agencies. Jay will discuss one of our research initiatives at NIH. This model of unleashing unbiased, depoliticized, gold standard scientific research and academic freedom to deliver actionable information to prevent and reverse disease will be a model for the framework to deliver similar results for many other chronic conditions that plague Americans. Okay.
Is the president and Robert F. Kennedy making announcement on possible links to autism?
The NIH has launched the Autism Data Science Initiative to turbocharge autism research, devoting an additional $50 million to the cause of studying autism. Nearly 250 research teams from across the country applied, sent in their applications, and were peer-reviewed by the NIH review panels. The NIH peer reviewers chose the 13 best projects focused on root causes and therapies, with replication and validation studies to guarantee gold standard science. The studies feature a new kind of science called exposomics, where scientists consider environmental and medical factors, nutrition, events during pregnancy, in combination with biology and genetics to answer vital questions about autism. Science like this, conducted in partnership with families and physicians, is the best way to arrest and reverse the autism epidemic. Autism spectrum disorder encompasses a very wide range of symptoms, ranging from mild difficulties with social interactions to profoundly autistic children who experience severe disabilities in speech and behavior. Given this wide range of symptoms across the spectrum, it seems certain that there will be a wide range of biological contributors to explaining the cause. The great thing about the new NIH initiative on autism is that scientists will use rigorous advanced methods in causal inference, machine learning, organoids, and other fresh approaches to the problem. The sharp rise in the prevalence of autism deserves an urgent response by the scientific community. As Bobby said, the NIH has invested a lot of money to study autism over the years, but the research has not produced the answers that families and parents of autistic children deserve, and autistic children themselves deserve. For too long, it's been taboo to ask some questions for fear the scientific work might reveal a politically incorrect answer. Because of this restricted focus in scientific investigations, the answers for families have been similarly restricted, often pointing families to behavioral therapies that don't work for every kid, or suggest non-modifiable genetic factors as the cause. But genetics alone can't explain such a sharp rise in autism prevalence over just a few decades, as the president said. In coming months and years, as NIH scientists learn more that can help autistic children and their families, we won't delay. Like scientists often like to do, I can say as a scientist myself, it's really tempting to delay, but in face of a problem like this, you have to move fast. But we will not delay before telling American people about what we find, and we will win the public trust with transparency and rigor. Already, our broadened focus on autism research has pointed to two items that will help families prevent and treat some cases of autism. I'll leave the good news on these two items to my close friends and colleagues, Dr. McCary and Dr. Ross. We've been working together closely on this problem for the past 6 months, and our cooperation represents an unprecedented collaboration with Secretary Kennedy's Department of Health and Human Services and with President Trump. I'm delighted to introduce Dr. Marty McCary, Commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, who will tell you about these announcements of practical help for families with autism.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Bhattacharya. Mr. President, this is the start of a historic shift in medical culture. This administration is working together to ask big questions about why our nation's children are getting sick so fast. Too often, medicine is doing small little studies, giving us answers we already knew. But we've got to make a difference. You've given us a charge to identify root causes, and we're not going to stop so that we can end the suffering we are watching. And if you've seen a kid with autism, with severe autism, it's hard to watch. Kids get frustrated, they get angry, they can be crying because they want to speak and they can't speak. It's hard to watch. And it may be entirely preventable. For an epidemiologist, that child is an expanding statistic. But for a child, it can be brutal to have autism. Today, the FDA is taking action to update the label on acetaminophen and sending a letter to all U.S. doctors letting them know about the risks in pregnancy. We now have data we cannot ignore. There's a very large study, the Boston Birth Cohort, with researchers that have from Johns Hopkins, my former institution, and Boston University, found, quote-unquote, consistent associations between acetaminophen in pregnancy and autism. And the Nurses Health Study with researchers from Yale, Columbia, and Harvard looking at 9,000 kids found that acetaminophen use in pregnancy was associated with neurodevelopmental disorders. And 4 weeks ago, a Mount Sinai Harvard study reviewed all the existing literature and found the overwhelming body of evidence points to an association. Sure, you'll be able to find a study to the contrary. That's how science works. But to quote the dean of the Harvard School of Public Health, there is a causal relationship between prenatal acetaminophen use and neurodevelopmental disorders of ADHD and autism spectrum disorder. We cannot wait any longer. And honestly, there's been this perfunctory, reactionary, mindless practice in medicine. I learned it in medical school and residency. Just treat all fevers, low-grade fevers, treat them with acetaminophen. Why? What are we doing? A study out of Hopkins actually showed that treating a fever can prolong the duration of illness in a young kid. Maybe that's because a fever is a body's natural way of ridding an infection. When my wife was pregnant and delivered our son a few months ago, they pushed her to take acetaminophen for a low-grade fever. She said no, and then they looked to me, and I said, absolutely new. I'm also here to announce good news. Today, the FDA is filing a Federal Register notice to change the label on an exciting treatment called prescription leucovorin so that it can be available to children with autism. You know, autism may also be due to an autoimmune reaction to a folate receptor on the brain, not allowing that important vitamin to get into the brain cells. It's a fairly established, mature pathway. Again, we have a duty to let doctors and the public know we are going to change the label to make it available. Hundreds of thousands of kids, in my opinion, will benefit. One study found that with kids with autism and chronic folate deficiency, 2/3 of kids with autism symptoms had improvement and some marked improvement. Mr. President, you told us to do what's medically right, to go bold, and not worry about the corporations and the lobbyists. So that's what we're here doing today. Thank you, Mr. President.
Good. Thank you.
Thanks, Marty. I think you all appreciate the passion in the president's voice. We've been hearing that since the inauguration. In fact, even before the inauguration, the president was upset about what he spoke to today. And so together with Secretary Kennedy, who's made it his life's work to address some of these challenges with autism, they challenged us. In fact, they were harsher than that. They wanted no silos to break down what the NIH would do, what the FDA would do, what CMS would do. They insisted that the physician leaders bust through the clutter because their agencies had the power. If we didn't do what every other prior administration had done, which is to let people function within their siloed environments. Because of that, in historic fashion and a very accelerated manner, we have a response today to the autism crisis. It is the first of several chapters, but this is breaking news. You've heard some of it. The response to the autism crisis is going to continue to come to you under Secretary Kennedy's leadership, and the president wouldn't have it any other way, as you've heard. The FDA, based on NIH research, is approving prescription leucovorin for treatment of autistic children. Now, if you're following the script, there should be two questions that you have, two questions that should come to your mind. The first is, how will patients and parents get access to the treatment? I'll tell you how. Over half of American children are covered by Medicaid and CHIP, government health insurance, over half. And therefore, because they're covered in Medicaid and CHIP, upon this label change by Marty, state Medicaid programs in partnership with CMS will cover prescription leucovorin around the country. It's yours, but you have to go to a doctor to get a prescription because they know your child, they know you, and they know the medication. States will also have tools to monitor its use and ensure appropriate utilization. That's important for a bunch of reasons, because we want the right kids getting the right prescription medications. We believe private insurance companies will rapidly follow our lead if they have not already done so. And again, to make sure that this is safe and effective treatment, you need a physician to prescribe the medication because it's on prescription. Second big question. How are we going to collect clinical data to answer the big questions that the president's asking and the secretary insists that we offer? CMS is also issuing guidance to convene states and existing research networks to support NIH and FDA in their research efforts on prescription leucovorin, while also maintaining the privacy of all patients, all health information of our beneficiaries. Collecting real-world data, which is what many of you have been asking us to do in the community, is fast, it is life-saving, and we'll get answers based on what happens over the next few months with this approach. The aggressive approach, and it is aggressive, demanded by the president and by the secretary, have already identified risk factors and opened the door for the first FDA-recognized treatment pathway for autism. It is the first of its kind, and it wouldn't have happened without the leadership of the president and the secretary. The fivefold increased prevalence of autism over the past 25 years demands a rapid response. The average clinician, researcher, we spoke to many, thought it would take 5 years to get this data. Parents are unwilling to wait 5 years. The president is unwilling to wait 5 years for these results. So the president and the secretary are acting today with this tri-agency move. The administration's bold actions investing in groundbreaking research follow the science. They restore trust, which has been lacking, and they will change the trajectory for millions of American families. Mr. President, God bless you for being brave.
Thank you very much.
So let me introduce.
All right, we're going to take a break. We got to take a jump out of this. But there you go. That's the major findings and Tylenol with a possible link to pregnancy, as the president said. And I'm sure there'll be a lot more on this tomorrow and in the days and weeks to come. No doubt about that. All right. So when we get back, we're going to dive into a little bit more on the New Jersey governor's race. Matt Rooney's going to join us. We'll look into the debate last night as all eyes are on Jack Cittarelli now taking the lead. The big story of the hour brought to you by Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Have you been putting off your free implant consultation? Well, stop putting it off, okay? You need to go see him and get that free implant consultation today. It's very, very important that you do so, and he's the best. Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. All right, quick break. Coming right back. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
So Jack is taking the lead. That's right. Welcome back. We're getting ready for a big rally in Wildwood, North Wildwood, on October 10th. It's going to be a huge rally. And one of the organizers of that rally is also a guy you can hear every weekend on this radio station. He's known as Mr. Save Jersey. He's Matt Rooney, and he joins us now on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Hey, Rooney, great to have you, man. I am looking forward to the 10th. It's going to be a banger.
I underestimated the draw that Rich Zeoli is. We've got hundreds of people signed up for this thing already. I mean, I told Mike Donahue, our mutual friend, well, you know, I know there's a couple people to come at for Rich, some of the usuals over on the YouTube feed, but I mean, this is going to be like a real Trump rally.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. But people do have to register by going to CapeGOP.com, CapeGOP.com, and you'll be speaking, and I'm going to be doing my show from there, and you'll come on the air with me, and we'll hang out. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a great night. I'm really excited. And this is coming off the momentum.
We've got some of the Zeoli Army's favorites lined up, too. We got Cliff Maloney, Paula Scanlon.
Nice.
I mean, the list is just growing day by day by day. Alexandra Bauer from Moms for Liberty. It's an all-star cast, folks, headlined by, of course, Jack Cittarelli, the man of the hour.
That's right. The man of the hour. And we're also going to do a candlelight cell phone vigil for Charlie Kirk, which will be nice. But yes, the man of the hour, Jack Cittarelli, let's talk about him because you have a piece at SaveJersey.com, and I'm just going to read the headline here. Cheryl debated like a candidate who knows she's in trouble. This is coming off the big debate last night. I had the new Republican National Committee chairman on the show about an hour ago. They're all in, man. They smell blood in the water here. It's great.
And you and I are never shy, Mr. Zeoli, about saying we told you so. We've been telling people for not just months, but years that New Jersey is not hopelessly blue. You just needed the right convergence of events, and we have that now. And look, I mean, I think I speak for everybody in the Zeoli Army. I'd give my left leg to have Charlie Kirk back with us again. He's one of the few guys in this movement that we could truly say was indispensable. But we know the left has no idea what they actually did when they assassinated him. They have awoken a sleeping giant. You're seeing it in Jack's polling. Heck, you're seeing it in the registration for this rally. People don't want to be silenced. They are determined to honor his legacy. The other side, I guess they're going to fight with bullets and innuendo and slander. We're going to win with ballots. And that's what it's all about in New Jersey this year. And that's the kind of guy that Jack has always been, Rich. You know this.
Yep.
He's always been the kind of guy that's willing to go anywhere, speak to everyone. He'll talk to small business owners. He'll talk to unions. He will go to the suburbs. He will go into a neighborhood in Newark where Republicans would be afraid to go back in the country club era. He's there, and as a result, he's winning over fans and voters and followers, and that's why now we have at least one poll showing him up.
This is a moment from the debate last night I still can't believe happened. I when I heard it last night happening, I was doing the dishes after watching the Eagles game and that triumphant victory, and I almost dropped the dishes because I couldn't believe this. Asked about the sales tax, Jack committed to not raising sales tax. I mean, I know this is cut 38 from last night's debate. You just I cannot believe it. In all my years of politics, I mean, this has to be the one of the worst answers I've ever heard in my life. Not Jack's answer, Mikey Sherrill's answer. Cut 38.
Yeah.
Both of you have at some point in discussing the state's finances said that all options are on the table. So I want to ask you about an increase in the sales tax. Are you willing to commit to not raise the sales tax if you become governor? And obviously I'm looking for a yes or a no, but I know that sometimes I'm disappointed in getting just the one word answer.
Whose turn is it first, Laura?
Jack should run.
We are not raising the sales tax here in New Jersey. What we need to do is lower the income tax and the property tax here in New Jersey. Those are the most burdensome taxes we pay. Pennsylvania's flat tax is 3% on personal income. Our highest bracket is 10.75. Pennsylvania's property taxes on average are $3,000 less per home than ours. What is it that Pennsylvania is doing that we're not? They give Republicans control from time to time. I think that's what they do in Pennsylvania. Listen, it took us 238 years to get the $36 billion budget. In 8 years, we went from $36 billion to $59 billion. Can anybody tell me their life is better off than it was 8 years ago? Has anything gotten better? I've been here for 64 years. 64 years. I never remember it being this bad. The affordability crisis, look at your property tax bill, look at your monthly electric bill. Public safety, public education, overdevelopment, and the worst place in the country to do business. That's why we are where we are today.
Good answer.
I'm not going to commit to anything right now because I'm not just going to tell you what you want to hear.
I'm not going to commit to anything right now. This is an overly scripted, overly prepared, bad candidate, Rooney.
Well, let's explain to people, too, in case you haven't tuned in yet, why that was so bad. And we got to get beyond her. I'm calling it a Virginia Chardonnay dialect that she has, right? She definitely does not sound like anybody from New Jersey. No. But she's not. She's from Virginia. But the DGA and the Democrat National Committee must be furious with her because they've been investing millions of dollars accusing Jack falsely of wanting to raise the sales tax. He says no at the debate. She goes and undermines a multi-million dollar advertising campaign by adopting the position that she alleged he had, that I'm keeping everything on the table. It was one of the most incredible self-owns in the annals of American debate history, and we can't be surprised we got it from Mikey Sherrill. And that's part of the reason, Rich, why in the article you cited, thanks for citing my SaveJersey.com post, by the way, the reason I said that she sounded like a candidate that knows she's losing is because if you just dropped into the middle of that debate hall and didn't have any context of the race, she was the one that was swinging wildly. She was the one that was clumsily continuing to come back to attacks on President Trump, who, if you didn't know any better, you would have thought he was there last night. How many times she brought him up? She looked like the one who believed that she needed to score points, as if she needed to, in some way, force Jack into a mistake so that she could recover lost ground. Jack was cool, calm, collected, substantive, definitely pushed back a few times. Knowing nothing, I would have thought that he was up a few points, which tells me that maybe that national research poll from Adam Geller that has him up a point is probably right, because she was acting like that's what her polling shows.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. And look, I mean, her voice is very difficult to listen to. And that's not a sexist thing, because I know men whose voices are very difficult to listen to. But she has done no vocal work. It's an annoyingly cadence to it. And it's not pleasant. And that was very obvious when she and Jack went back and forth over the Charlie Kirk thing, which also I just shot herself in the foot for no reason whatsoever. She could have just kept her mouth shut. There was no reason to weigh in on this, and yet she decided to do so. She could have just not voted that day. She could have said she was on the campaign trail, but she had to double down and dig in deep. And Chitarelli didn't miss the opportunity to go after her over it. And I'm glad that that he did go after her last night. So we have the clip of that from the debate last night. This is cut number 7.
My opponent on Friday went down to Washington, voted yes on a resolution to celebrate Charlie Kirk's life, but then within minutes sent out a statement that basically condemned him. I think that was wrong.
You can have 30 seconds to respond.
That's a neat trick to say you don't want to divide people, and then in your answer, bring up something that's very divisive. Here's the thing. I care deeply about this country. I stand against political violence. The videos that came out about after Charlie Kirk's shooting were horrific. And I feel horrible because my kids have seen them, and so I can't even imagine how the Kirk family feels. And that should never happen to anyone because they speak out. And I also have stood up my entire life, and I've taken numerous oaths, up to and including offering to die for this country for free speech.
Fine.
And so I think it's fair to have free speech, but I think it should go to everyone, to Jimmy Kimmel and to myself as well.
Final word, Jack Chitarelli, 15 seconds. Ask the audience to please remain quiet. 15 seconds for you.
She still hasn't answered your question, and we see this time and time in the campaign, generalities, platitudes, ducking the direct question by not giving a direct answer.
That's just not true. My direct answer is, I voted to protect free speech. I voted to end political violence. I also think it's fair, Jack, to speak up when you disagree with something. And so if you want to stand up that Martin Luther King was a bad guy or that women should submit to their husbands, you, Jack, are welcome to do that. And I have the right to say that I disagree with it.
Okay. We're gonna move on now.
First of all, a couple things here. Number one, she tries to equate this with Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel's coming back tomorrow night. But you know who isn't coming back tomorrow night? Charlie Kirk. Okay, so conflating the two is not even close to being appropriate. And yet she goes there and also lies about Charlie Kirk. I mean, women should be subservient to their husbands. Erica Kirk is now running Turning Point USA. So I mean, it's right. Another, it's a lie, right. But it's also so jumbled and confusing that I don't even understand what she's talking about, other than it's just hatred.
It's jumbled, it's confusing, and it's delivered with a voice that can best be described as Kamala Harris on helium. Like, it actually makes my brain hurt listening to her. I can't do that for 4 to 8 years.
It's hard.
But, you know, it's a very valid point, Mr. Zioli, because these far-left feminists, not the real feminists, the ones who pretend to be, who say that they're for women but then can't define what a woman is, they are constantly trying to judge other women as to who is worthy of the title. So she looks down on someone like Mrs. Kirk, or the widow of Charlie, this incredible American. I have never seen strength like what we saw from her standing in that rally out in Arizona the other night. I could not do that at all if that had happened to my spouse and I had young children at home and had the eyes of the world on me. I'd probably be at home underneath a pillow. The beautiful thing about this moment, the silver lining, is that once again, it has never been clear what separates us from them. Real courage from performative courage. What actually makes someone a true leader and what makes somebody a demagogue. My one critique of Jack Chitarelli last night is at that moment, I wish he had said, Mikey, I want you to look into that camera And I want you to apologize to Erica Kirk and the tens of thousands of Americans mourning out there tonight in Arizona, because your rhetoric is the reason why they're having this memorial service.
Yeah.
Comments like yours that are leading to violence in this country, that's not leadership. You are the one that's ripping this country to shreds. And candidly, in New Jersey, like everywhere else in the country, we're tired of it.
Yeah, Matt Rooney, look, you're exactly right. And the other point, too, is, I mean, Jack is running a really, really strong race, and he's out there on the trail constantly all the time. He had a zinger at Mikey Sherrill for not being out in the trail yesterday. That was good. And what I liked about it was...
It was funny.
And it also kind of points to the fact that she's not from Jersey, she's not from here, and she's been a D.C. elitist. And I think if she was here and she was just talking to people, people would understand that there's a lot of sadness over what happened to Charlie Kirk, even from people that didn't even know who Charlie Kirk was. It's just, it's a very awful, sad thing that happened. And yet, it's like she's just so... It's almost like a bad AI. But I know AI would have a voice that's much more soothing than that, just based on my own smart devices that I have, so that you
could at least do a lot better.
Yeah, you could at least adjust the setting and ask for some sort of firmware upgrade if it sounded like that. Here's cut 37 from
the week. A whole lot less crazy, please.
Yeah, cut 37.
The congresswoman is right about one thing. I do get up and down this state. 564 towns, 21 counties, North, Central, South, and Jersey Shore. I'm actually pleasantly surprised to see her tonight. I thought I might see a surrogate. So, if you want to talk about getting up and down the state, if you want this job, interview for the job, get up and down the state.
Yeah, she's not out there. I mean, that's the other point, too. Where is she? Where is Mikey Sherrill?
Yeah, she's in her basement. She's in her basement, and she's in an echo chamber, where, as you said very correctly, I don't think she understands this Charlie Kirk thing because she doesn't interact with real New Jerseyans. She's in a white, quote-unquote, educated liberal bubble up there in Montclair, whose politics are to the left of the Soviets in their heyday. And let's not forget for a minute why she said what she said about Charlie Kirk here, right? It wasn't just because she's a hateful leftist. She doesn't like us, the Zoli Army. She thinks we're beneath her. We don't have dignity. We're barely human, to Mikey Sherrill. It's because she's got a base problem. Right? She's hiding not just because she can't open her mouth without sticking her foot in it. She's hiding because people don't like her. She goes to some of the places that Jack goes and no one shows up. She's got a problem with black men. She's got a problem with Hispanic families. She's got a problem with working single moms. The youth. Is this sounding familiar? I hope it does. This is exactly what happened in 2024 when Kamala failed to execute her strategy of hiding behind the money of her gazillionaire donor. She was hoping ads could carry her through. Well, eventually, in 2024 and 2025, you have to open your mouth because we have a social media age. Everything's digitized. It's instantaneously blasted around the world. And now everyone, if they had any doubt before, knows exactly the quality of Mikey Sherrill. They saw it last night. The clips are bouncing all over the place. She's a train wreck. We've been telling people this. I call her Kamala Harris of the East Coast. There's been other names applied. I'm starting to feel like I owe Kamala Harris an apology. She did better in that first debate against Trump than Mikey Sherrill did last night.
It was bad. It was a bad night. And then, of course, Jack was able to go after her over her stock trading. And she gave the same horrific answer she gave to Charlemagne the God, which was when she said, "I don't trade individual stocks." I mean, it was this exact same bad answer that she gave that went viral the last time she said it.
Right. Oh, my God.
It's maddening. Go ahead.
And I was going to say, like, I'm someone who obviously wants her to lose. Surprise, surprise to everybody listening. And I almost wanted to yell out at that point, how did you not prepare for it this time?
Yeah.
And that was months ago. People have studied and passed the bar exam in the same amount of time she's had since she was on that program and still completely screwed up the answer. I mean, is that someone you want in charge of your state? No. And I already got this once from NJ.com, Rich. I don't know if I told you this. I had a reporter call me a couple months ago to interview me about the Kamala of the East Coast tag, and they were clearly trying to work up a story that somehow it was sexist. And I reminded this reporter that, no, you know, idiots come in all shapes and colors and genders. By the way, there's only two genders. And you're actually insulting women and degrading women by trying to suggest that any criticism of a politician is somehow an indictment of half the planet. Surprise, surprise, that article never ran. I think it's because it didn't read the way that they wanted it to. But this is what we're up against in 2025. So I've said it before, I've said it again, I'm going to say with Rich Zeoli and Mike Donahue and everybody else down at Wildwood, you cannot sit this one out, folks. I got on a bus last year, crossed the Delaware River with Mike, campaigned in Bensalem because Pennsylvania was the most important thing on the map. This year it's Jersey. If we win New Jersey in 2025, America First is undeniably on the march. You think the left is on the heels right now? Man, Jimmy Kimmel's going to seem like nothing if they lose in November. They are going to realize that the American people are no longer with them, and the blue wave narrative for the midterms will be decimated. But you got to help us. We're working every day. We need you in this fight.
Well, I think two things, Rudy. You said, number one, the Kirk's assassination awoke a sleeping giant. That's certainly true, because we were very worried about voters who voted for Trump not turning out in this election, because they tended to vote for Trump and then nobody else. So that was number one. Now they're fired up and they're coming out. Number two, the point about her base and why I think she's gone down this dark road of Charlie Kirk, and I think it's what you're saying too, is that she can't afford to lose any Democrat votes. I mean, historically, Democrat candidates, especially in a state like New Jersey, you could afford to shed a few thousand without a problem. But this race is so tight right now. She's worried about having the far left loonies, which is increasingly now every Democrat. But she's really worried about that. So she's catering to them, because there is absolutely no upside whatsoever to say the things about Charlie Kirk unless you are in the bubble, like you said, and you're listening to the extremists. And you're also worried about some of those extremists staying home to prove a point, like, oh, next time, send us a real lefty if you want to get our vote. So we've seen Republicans do that in the past in general elections. Maybe that's what is her internal polling showing, that maybe they don't consider her, which is going to be shocking enough to all of us. But she's always pretended to be a moderate. She ran that way when she ran for the old Romney Friedlingheisen seat up in North Jersey. She's always pretended to be that. So I don't know. Maybe that's the scam here. Maybe that's the game that's being played.
Made a comment last night at one point. It didn't get a lot of attention, but it made me nearly pop out of my seat. This is the least partisan race I've ever run. And I'm thinking, oh my God, what kind of barometer is that? You are obviously running a campaign which, much like Kamala Harris's campaign, only appeals to a very narrow subset of the population. If you're a lefty Chardonnay mom, if you don't know what your gender is, if you are a billionaire that doesn't have to worry about market forces, I guess the Democrat Party arguably has something to offer you until the bread lines start. But it doesn't appeal to anyone else, and it's simple math. Like, you're right. Up until this point, in 2021, Democrats had about 1 million voter registration advantage across the state. That's now down to about 800,000, which may still seem like a lot, and it is. But remember, Jack only lost by about 84,000 last time. Right. And just a little bit more math to bore you with after 5 o'clock, 330,000 New Jersey registered Republicans voted in 2024 that did not show up in 2021. So I hate to report this to the general of the Zeoli Army, but there are members of the Zeoli Army that probably didn't vote in 21, need to be activated in 2025. The math is there. It's not working for them anymore. We just need to make sure those numbers become a reality.
Now, listen, buddy, we're going to get him out there, brother. We'll do that on October 10th. So go to CapeGOP.com, CapeGOP.com. Our big event with Rooney and with Chairman Mike Donahue.
It's going to be huge.
It's going to be huge. And Jack Ciccarelli, of course, Paula Scanlon, so many other great people will be there as well. But you got to sign up and register. Follow Matt at Matt Rooney and Save Jersey and SaveJersey.com, and listen to him this weekend right here on 1210 WPHD. Thanks, brother. Great stuff. I appreciate it.
Always my pleasure. I'll talk to you all soon. Maybe in Wildwood.
See you in Wildwood, buddy.
The The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, I've been on the air since noon, filling in for Jimmy Failus. So I took over around 12:40 today on his show. So Tom Aislevy is going to do the last hour of this show, and then you can start tuning in to hear me again for Jimmy Failus' show. So I've got to do a quick little turnaround here. But thank you, and keep the conversation going on X at Rich Cioli. And Big Story of the Hour, obviously brought to you by Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. It is the time of year to start thinking about your smile and all those pictures coming up for Christmas. So make your appointment today. VeneriaDental.com. Two locations to serve you. We'll be right back.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.